Hi, I'm Andrew Richardson, and I'm talking about depression and depression recovery. I'm that very rare animal, a depression recovery optimist, and my aim in these podcasts is to open you to the truth that your depression can be easily understood and relieved and quickly too. And this podcast, which is rather longer than most, I'm speaking the words of Rosanna, an authentic voice of a terrible depression. Her words are interspersed with my own of explanation and elucidation. So what was depression like for Rosanna? Introspection and rumination, like a tap that cannot be turned off, and the thoughts becoming wilder and wilder. Eventually, depression became a prison for her, trapped inside her mind. Here are her words. "I feel like I'm going mad and fast. Every day my brain feels as if it is getting weaker. 6 months after my initial breakdown, and I fear I am on a downward spiral that can only end one way. It's frightening, one that fills me with terror and a morbid excitement. I feel as if my life is destined to fail. Logically, some deep inner intelligence tells me not to be so daft, that I have reason to live, reason to hope. But that deep inner intelligence tires quickly and submits to the contaminated lump in my brain that tells me I'm better off dead. Church bells, I don't know why they ring at this time of night. Practice for Sunday, perhaps? You'd think they'd know the fucking time by now. Sad, it used to be my favorite sound. I long to feel normal, not to be filled with rage or to the brim with tears. Living life on the edge of your emotions is like walking in stilettos along Beachy Head. One blunt response, one clumsily stubbed toe, and I rapidly crash into the self-pity. I now hate myself for it. I can only compare it to being trapped in a burning room. Closing my eyes in an attempt to escape just puts me closer to these horrible thoughts. There is no escape. It's all too powerful for me to overcome, and the only way I can escape is to jump. I know I'll die if I do, but at least I won't spend the last moments of my life in terror. I'll have control again, even if briefly." This is me again. The early mornings. The classic symptom of depression is that the mornings is the worst time because of the exhaustion of dreaming more than one is capable to dream. Back to Rosanna. "Evenings are better for me at the moment. I don't feel happiness, but the despair seems distant. I can numb myself in the evenings. The meager 6 milligram of valerian I take has kicked in, and EastEnders is on also." Depression is a self-obsessed trance state. Depression is selfish and so hateful. Rosanna, "Depression makes you feel selfish. I see adverts for sponsorship of starving children in Africa, and in the most terrible way I envy them. I envy their physical pain and hope that God or whoever is up there doesn't hear me. How bloody awful my brain does that. I feel so self-absorbed and ashamed. I know the luxuries I have, food, shelter, warmth, abilities. This too shall pass. I'm getting fucked off with hearing that. I'm sure it will pass, but when? And what if I remember it? What if it becomes such a huge part of my identity? I'll be institutionalized in my own psychosis. All these questions. I know worrying doesn't help. If it did, I'd only worry once. It doesn't make it easier to stop, to jump off that treadmill of negativity and laugh at the lighter things in life. 6 months of suicidal thoughts every single day, all day, every day. I fantasize to the point of suddenly finding myself with a belt tightly pulled around my neck, and nowhere is strong enough to attach it. I might have looked like a very reluctant gimp. The suicidal thoughts are the hardest to push away. They're so powerful and authoritative and worrying. They make sense. What a fantastic option. My brain's a mess. My brain is me. I can't even close my eyes and escape into another world. If I killed myself, I'd have no brain. Problem solved. I'm fucked up with everyone at the moment, especially myself. My doctor is an imbecile. She told me last week that I must be getting better as my hair looked nice. I know hair sprouts from our heads, but I didn't realize that it was so directly linked to our mental health. I'm having troubles putting into words how low I was. Even low is an understatement. I think I'm imploded. There was nothing left of me. I'd convinced myself that was it. Even if I didn't kill myself, I would be the type of person who would die through suicide. This is me. Seeing Andrew is about relieving the pressure and not talking too much in the first session. I arrived at my first session with Andrew, a teary-eyed mute. I could not speak and I choked on every word. I had no idea how I was going to express to Andrew what was wrong. Luckily, I didn't have to. That is the beauty of Andrew's treatment. He understands the pointlessness and the unnecessary pain caused by going over and over the thoughts that are tormenting you. He could see from the moment he met me that I was in no fit state to explain what was wrong, yet he managed to help me. It was miraculous. I probably said a handful of words in that first session, and Andrew didn't chat much either, but the quality of what he said gave me an instant hope. Part of the weight had been lifted, and he insisted on taking the burden from me. The most significant thing he said to me at that first meeting was, "Suicide is a solution, but let's find a better one." In all, I had 4 sessions before I felt recovery. With each session, I felt a gradual progress and lightening in my life. I could see other options and could see all the things I had to look forward to. Before meeting with Andrew, I couldn't imagine the future. There was nothing there. It felt like a dark void, and it frightened me so much.